Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Pelaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45. Got a huge group of people here in the studio today, joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
Yeah, and we got Jordana Rothman over here in the other seat. How you doing? Doing well?
So well.
Yeah, Jordana and Nastasia together, actually, for the 4th of July, which we get to. But also, special guest today, we got Clifford. So how do you actually pronounce your last name? You go by the last name Endo usually, but it's actually Goulibert.
It's Goulibert, but that name was given to our family by French missionaries.
Ooh, so the original like Palauan
Endo is our Japanese real last name. So Clifford Endo is what I usually go by.
Oh, so why? How come when did this happen? When did you make this change in your name?
18 years old.
Wow. All right. So Endo it is. No more Goulibert.
Well, it's still there. I just never say it.
All right.
Yeah. It exists for government documents only.
Yeah, so you're interesting, actually, like Japanese, but Palauan, that's what I like, because I like the word Palau.
Palau, yeah. It's a small, tiny little island. My mom's from there. I was born there. They're half Japanese, half Palauan.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would hate it, right? Tropical paradise, I would hate it.
Yeah, it'd be terrible. The crystal blue waters, more fish than you could ever imagine.
Well, the fish delicious?
Oh, God, yeah.
All right, that's a sale. I'll go. And so, Jordana and Stas, you guys... Oh, by the way, calling your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128.
You know, I do have a caller on the line. We can get to him whenever.
But... All right, okay. I'm not going to let him hang. Caller, you're on the air.
Dave, what's up? It's Joe from Greenpoint.
How you doing? How's Greenpoint doing today?
Very, very good. Nice. I love your show. So I've been experimenting with smoking briskets, and I wanted to try to do like a combination of sous vide or like low temperature cooking and smoking, and I wanted to get your thoughts on how I might go about doing that. Like, should I do the smoking? I'm assuming I should do the smoke first, and then the put it in the water. But what temperature should I do? I was kind of thinking maybe it would be cool to do it's like medium rare braise type thing, but I don't know if that's something that you would recommend for brisket. What would your thoughts be?
Just so you know, so the people we got here, you got your normal Nastasia to tell me that I'm an idiot, but Cliff has been doing worked with me for a long time and has been doing culinary production for the past couple of years, so mm-hmm. worked a lot with these kind of techniques. And Jordana is currently paid to write about eating and cooking, and formerly critic of other people's cooking, correct?
Very critical. Deeply critical person.
Right. So I'm sure you have probably your own views on low temperature brisket, and you know Cliff has his, but I'll just give you mine right away. If you're doing a low temp brisket and you're going to go medium rare, let's divide this into two problems: smoke problem and the texture problem, the temperature you're going to do, right? So if you're going to go low temperature on it, it's not going to taste like a traditional brisket. So if you're let's say you're going to a restaurant, someone says, I'm going to give you a brisket. You have in your mind what a brisket is, right? Mm-hmm. Someone comes out with something that's meat rare, even if it's tender, you're like,
right.
That's more steaky.
Right. And doesn't hit the spot.
Because the spot you thought you were getting hit with was the brisket spot. Yeah. And a medium rare brisket it's delicious, but it hits a different kind of a spot. So like, and I think that's the main problem with, and I did this because I don't know how many thousands of short ribs I've cooked, when I was at the French Culinary as part of all the teaching stuff that we did, but you know, the more and more I ate, I was like, this is delicious, but it's not really a short rib. And if you want a short rib, this is not what you want. Anyone, you guys agreeing with me here? So like, you can do a medium rare thing. It's not going to taste as meaty, right? And it won't have as much moisture loss, so it won't have the same texture or concentration of flavor. So there's that, right? So you can choose. You can do like a relatively, you know, medium. It's like when I do confit, I do high temp. Honestly, I do. If you want to do the meat rare thing, do the meat rare thing, but it's not going to be the same. The other thing is that for smoking for flavor and color, yeah, you could smoke it. You can smoke it before because that's going to prevent the drying out of it. So if you're going to do a mead rare, I would smoke before. Then I would do your low temp, and then I would do a final crisp up on the outside of the skin.
Yeah, that was my worry, was bark degradation.
Oh yeah, hell yeah! You got to give a final crisp up. The answer is always a final crisp up.
Yeah,
unless it's going to be all, you know, El Saso. But even in a case like if you do a like, remember Cliff, when we used to do for the low temp sous vide classes, we would do the short ribs, and they come out of the sauce and they have that dude. It's gusting, green tinge.
Yeah, you have to fix that.
You have to fix that, right? So you just need a little bit of heat on the outside, even if you didn't care about the texture, even if you were going to chum it up and turn it into baby food just to get the color right, much less the texture on the outside. But just remember, the pleasure of a fine brisket is a little bit of drying out on the outside. In my opinion, it's a little bit of the drying out on the outside, unless you're – well, I mean, no, it is. I mean, it is. So I mean, like a little bit of crust on the outside, even if you're going to go mead rare. One last thing I'll give you. I don't really see any freaking point at all in going anywhere in between. Like as soon as you hit in beef, I would say like 63 Celsius. Yeah. Anything above that, I don't see the damn point. Just go full temp. I don't really see much of a good range in there. Anyone agree, disagree? Anyone? No? All right. What is this answering your question or not? I can't tell.
Yeah, no, definitely. But what temp would you – first of all, do you think it's worth smoking it first and doing this, or is it just a stupid idea? And secondly, what temp would you do it if you were to do it?
What temp – for the cook? I mean, like –
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, for the sous vide part of it, the temp part of it.
Okay, well, after – look, like when you're first doing a lot of low temp work, you're – inclination is to do the kind of virtuoso move that like Bruno Gousseau, like, you know, the granddaddy of low temp cooking used to do, where he'd do like his, you know, long cooked meats at rare at like 54, you know, degrees, which is like rare. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, awesome, right? And remember, this is a story I haven't told in a long time, so Nastasia is not going to throw up if I tell it again. But Chef Alain Sayac, who was, like the dean at the French Culinary Institute, went to a famous dinner that Joël Robuchon and Bruno Gousseau gave, and they gave them a 72-hour, like 52 or 54-degree short rib. And Chef Alain was like, you know, this is not a short rib. And he's like, it made me sick. I was sick. I was like, it's not, it didn't make you sick, dude. It was like straight up bacteriologically safe. Sucker was the safest damn thing in the world. It could be served to people in like a nursing home. Thing was safe. But he thought it made him sick because he's like, it is disgusting. Who wants this? You know what I mean? So it's like, it just wasn't anything he wanted. So for a virtuoso move with your food buddies who like new stuff, yeah, you can go all the way that low. In general, people like long cooked things higher, like 57, which is about 135, is a good mead rare long cook, but it's not going to be as meaty. You could push it all the way up to, like I say, to like, I mean, if you're gonna go low, I would just do 50 between 57 and 60, somewhere in that range, and never above like 62, 63, but like I would stay in that 57 to 60 range. It gets each increment in temperature you go up, it gets a little drier, but a little more meaty flavored.
Okay.
Remember, if you're going to put a sauce in the bag, reduce the hell out of it. This is the mistake people make. They don't reduce the hell out of it. You ever put like a meat in a bag and you cook it and all the juices come out and now it's like swimming in its own juices, especially at these higher temperatures, if you're going to go like 60, right? So think about the fact that any like sauce that you put in, which is not going to evaporate at all, is going to get diluted by the meat's own juices, and then it's going to be like – it's going to be poached. And poaching is an entirely different technique, my friend.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck.
All right.
So before we get into the questions that were written in, we got to talk about, Stas and Jordana, 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. It was really magical.
Yeah? You were there in the Watch Hill, right?
It was another time. It was like being in the 1930s, and we built a fort, and it was spectacular.
A fort? I was told teepee. Fort?
It was a teepee, yeah. No, it was a glowing teepee in the forest outside of our restored barn.
I like that a lot. You know, I'm going to build a legit teepee, like 15-foot teepee with pole.
I'm sure you're going to do it better than I did it.
Well,
but,
I mean,
you know.
did you buy the two best-known references on teepee and lodge construction?
No. Actually, what I did was I went foraging in a shed for electrical cords, which I lashed around some trees and hung sheets over them. So if that's how you would do it,
that's pretty baller. I mean, like, I like, you know, this, you know what I like about Jordana Stiles? She gets it done.
I'm
a resourceful chick.
You know, you didn't need a TP.
I'm capable.
You didn't need a TP in a week, right?
What we actually did, although Anastasia disagrees with this, is that we weaved throughout the trees, and I tried to pay attention to the trees to which Anastasia was particularly drawn.
She hates trees.
No, she doesn't.
Trees. She tells me. Because I like them, so she says that she hates
them. She doesn't
them.
Like cooked fruit, the bottom of pools.
Biscuits.
Biscuits and
pie.
The Eagles.
Oh,
that's cooked fruit.
The Eagles, yeah, she hates them. So not the team, the band.
But she does like trees.
Eagles, the band, okay.
Yeah. She does like trees. This is a witchy woman.
But she always told me she hates them because I like them.
Well, when we have to stop and, like, eat the leaves. Maybe,
she doesn't like the things that you do with trees. She likes what I do with trees. It's a different thing entirely.
She likes S&M-ing trees.
She wasn't there for the lashing.
Oh,
they
did that in private.
I lashed alone so that I could surprise her.
Nice. Yeah. I heard that you guys were crushing your beer cans and throwing them into Taylor Swift's deck.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did.
Nice.
Yeah, we filled them with fireworks, actually.
Nice.
And we created projectiles, and they landed, and Ed Sheeran's hair caught on fire.
I like that.
That's the origin tale of his red hair.
That's sweet. I like that a lot. So, you know, I actually, like, you know, one of your buddies who was there was supposed to get the fireworks for your shindig, Stas, didn't do it.
Yeah, no, but I had another buddy who showed up with fireworks.
Oh, thank God for buddies. I had a huge amount of illegal fireworks at my place, and I have to say, I think I talked about it on the show. If you have the opportunity, if you live near a state that, like, has decent laws about fireworks, go out right now, because I'm sure it's cheap, and buy the 500-gram zipper cake entitled American Trucker. It is 11 seconds of awesome. Awesome.
Is that the name of a firework?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And right before we played it, I cranked American Woman, like Lenny Kravitz, and
ooh,
the American Trucker was like, like, here's the thing, like, most times, so the 500 grams is the most amount of powder you can put into a firework and sell legally and as one block of firework. And I bought some of the giant tubes that you light singly, which are awesome because they're like, poof, you know, they go really high.
Bullet.
But the ones that you, like, light one and walk away, it's awesome. So most of these last, like, 45 seconds, a minute. But American Trucker does its full 500 grams in 11 seconds. 11, and I like it. Like, I'm that kind of guy. I hope this doesn't say to me. I'm that guy that I crunch my candy. You know what I'm saying? I put the hard candy in my mouth. I try to suck on it for a minute. I'm like, F this, and I crunch it, and that's it. Because I want that burst.
We're different in that way.
You're the long suck?
I'm a slow burn gal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so maybe you would prefer the big and bold, which is another one of the 500 gram cakes that I got. But I'm saying American Trucker for my money, especially if you back it up with a bunch of, like, Excalibur and El Diablo shells right afterwards. Awesome. Anyway, also,
I got another caller, by the way.
Oh, wait, one thing. Also, I hooked up my deep fryer to go LP. So I took my natural gas deep fryer out of the city. I'm no longer a deep fryer in the city. Brought it to Connecticut, fired it up on propane, have it outside. So I've for years been telling people to put their deep fryer outside, and so I can report on how it's going to work with weather and propane usage and all that. I'll be testing it the whole freaking summer, but I was busting out fries and chicken and shrimp like the end of the freaking world was coming. Anyway, caller, you're on the air.
It's Colin down in D.C., calling in. And I had a question, sort of set of questions about ice for you. Got a friend who's opening up a bar in, you know, a former restaurant space, and they've got some equipment still there, and we're trying to see if it makes any sense to hold on to that for their ice program.
So you mean like an ice machine? They have some ice machines you want to hold on to.
Yeah, they got an ice machine, and they got like a Victory two-door reach-in freezer. We're hoping to try to use to do some, like, bigger, clear presentation kind of cubes and stuff.
Okay.
With the small stuff, they've got an isomatic little thing that, like, pushes out those little waffle-shaped cube things.
Yeah.
Is that It's like smaller than you suggest in your book for shaken stuff or stirred stuff because it's just too much surface and they melt quick.
Yeah, they're kind of execrable little things. I mean, like, do you have a non-cocktail use for them?
I think they might. I mean, I think he's shipped in this place to mainly a cocktail bar with like a small food program.
I mean, I don't know how much I don't know what the cost of ownership on that sucker is, but I mean, like, if I could do whatever I wanted, I would get like a medium decent ice machine, right, with decent size, you know, not like huge cubes, but decent size cubes, one that's easy to kind of work with. I would do my own ice program by freezing down cubes, probably in a chest freezer. You could do reach in, but chest, yeah, in igloos. And then if I had like super money, I would go get a nugget machine because I've always wanted a nugget machine. And then that's what I would do.
Oh,
and then if you wanted like a serious, like if you wanted a serious, what's it called, like raw bar, you could get a flake, or you could just get a machine to flake out the cubes that you got. But that's what I would do. The thing, like, if you're strapped for cash, yeah, make it work with the crap ice that, you know, comes out of that machine. But you know, make sure that you change the filters and make sure everything, like, you know, if it's coming out clear, your filters
that's
are probably good.
So
if it's not,
like the water off that ice is quite nice. It's good, but it's just, you know, it's kind of small. We sort of see that it's got limitations and. You know, we could calibrate around that and just try to work with it, but...
You could. You could, but, you know...
With the idea of, like, try for something like... It's like a cold draft machine sort of sounds like what has the buzz is something...
Yeah, I mean, cold draft...
That people use a lot around here.
I like cold draft for, cocktail stuff, but, you know, if you're going to do any culinary with it, it's kind of a crappy culinary ice because it doesn't stack very well into, if you actually need to ice a bunch of stuff down, it's a little bit of a pain in the butt. Here's another thing I'll say. In New York, a lot of the times what you do is you hire, like, the bartender comes in and they're working a couple shifts here, a couple shifts there, a couple shifts here, a couple shifts there, right? Then it's going to be hard to have everyone bend their head around the fact that you're using shell ice and everyone else is not, and so you're probably going to have some issues with it. If your bar team is only your bar team and they're only working with you, then you can crank, you know, like, as long as you know what your tools are, you can crank delicious stuff out no matter what ice you have. It doesn't matter. You just have to, like, alter your techniques a little bit, but then it requires you to make sure that everyone does alter their techniques, and if someone comes in, you have to beat them around the head and tell them that, you know, that it's a little different from where they worked before, et cetera, to make sure that everything's right. And you're going to have to keep a really eagle eye on your wash lines when the drinks come out and stuff like that. But, I mean, it can be done. I mean, ice is ice. It's just the rate at which it dilutes. That's all you're messing with, right? And then how much surface water's on it. Yeah.
Well, one thing we had heard in talking to some of our friends down here that had places was that, you know, a couple of them had some kind of recurring maintenance issues with their cold draft machine.
Yeah, recently?
Is there stuff to really pay attention to with those, or is that, like,
I don't know.
Something that makes them a little bit higher maintenance than just the shell ice machines?
They claim that they fixed those maintenance problems, but I don't know whether that's true. It also used to be that there weren't as many people around servicing cold drafts, so when they went down, there was, like, problems. I mean, a lot of times in the summer, especially as your machine ages, you're going to get problems with your ice machine because they're running all the time. But I, you know, I had heard that I thought that they fixed that problem. I'd heard that was a problem. I haven't owned one. Or, you know, had to use one on a daily basis in years. So I don't currently know, like, but someone will probably tweet in and be like, nah, they fixed that. They work fine. Or they'll tweet and be like, no, it's still a problem. You know what I mean?
I mean, are there other sort of brands in that ballpark that are recommended by people?
Almost everyone now makes a larger size cube that you can use and a nicer cube. I would look, you know, you're going to have a service contract at the bar restaurant, so I would honestly, whoever services this stuff well, I haven't done – it used to be that every year or so I would have to read all of the company's specs on their ice machines and freezers and fridges and see who was coming out with, like, the new stuff because I used to write about it for Food Arts. But I haven't spec'd one in a long time. So, you know, I don't know – you know, things to look for are, you know, is the filtration good? Does it have a problem with mold and slime growing on the inside of the unit, because that's, you know, an issue. Who is that guy? Some guy told me about the guy in Texas who used to, like, go into every restaurant, bust into the kitchen with the camera crew, go to the ice machine, and be like, green slime! And that was, like, all he ever did. That was his only restaurant shtick. You heard of this guy?
Definitely not.
I think he's dead now. But anyway, it's a kind of a good shtick, right? Green slime. So you want to make sure that you know that that's the thing. It's easy to clean, and it's not going to harbor nasty bacteria. That's it. You don't want to harbor nasty bacteria. You want a good filter. You want to make nice, clear ice. It doesn't taste like crap. Don't you hate it when you go to a place and the ice machine has some sort of like crazy-ass infection and the ice tastes wrong? Don't you hate that? You hate it?
Yeah. And it never gets dry. It just stays wet.
Yeah, you know what else? Gross. Yeah, I hate that. You know what else I hate? When they don't fix the filters on their ice machines and the ice machine gets that crumply look on the outside of the ice, that like raggedy look on the outside of the ice because it wasn't like filtered right. I hate that. Or when you start getting the cloudy sprays through the ice because it's filtered. I hate that. Hate. Yeah. Anyways, I hope that helps.
On the like big clear box side, we did a run trying just like a double stacking, like a like shorty in the regular depth hotel pans to kind of create a, you know, an empty space beneath. And do you see something like that working? I mean, do you see like an inherent problem with that other than that, like the bottom chunk's gonna not be beautiful as long as we like kind of
Did it work?
Yeah, it seemed to. It's just the way it is right now is kind of slow because it's a little hot in that room. So we're working on the ventilation to make the refrigeration work a little more efficiently.
Right. I mean, it's supposed to be slow. You should only be freezing. Look, to get a really nice clear cube, you should probably only be freezing in that kind of a freezer without movement, because remember, you're not moving in like a Kleinbell. Kleinbell can freeze faster because the water's moving. In a fridge, right. You probably shouldn't be you probably shouldn't be freezing more than like 2.5 inches a day.
That was another thing I was curious about.
And you know, look, if the double pans works for you, if it insulates it enough such that you're not trapping stuff in the underside of it and you're still getting clear cubes that you can chip off the stuff, then yeah, I mean, that's easier to deal with than igloos. I've always just done it in an igloo because I don't know, I just have. I've never tried a double hotel pan.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've done at home. It works.
Yeah.
In the freezer, right? It's got a defrost cycle and an individual timer to run that. If we're using this primarily just for freezing blocks of ice, is there a best way to kind of game that defrost cycle?
I would I don't think the defrost is going to – defrost is not going to hurt your – as far as I can tell, the defrost is not going to hurt your ice making. And it will shaft your coils if you don't defrost it. Defrost, obviously, don't ever put freaking ice cream in a freezer that has a defrost cycle because you're just asking for pain. Obviously, ruining everything. But but remember, the whole goal of a big ice cube is giant freaking ice crystals. So the enemy of your ice, which is like melting the small crystals and free freezing them back in of your ice cream rather melting them back into larger ice crystals, is in fact your friend when it comes to big ice, your friend. Don't shaft those coils.
As your mom always told me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're gonna go through a whole nother episode without getting to any of the written questions, aren't we? Is that gonna happen to us?
Well, people should only ask one question per call.
I know, but that's not been our rule. If you want to establish a rule, you can establish a rule, but that's not been. All right. Should we do some questions before we go to break? Jack.
Yes.
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 Oh, by the way, I'll just put this in. I shouldn't do this, but John Rivet wrote in, and so Dave cared to weigh in on the latest peas in guacamole debate. I didn't even hear about this till it was too late. Apparently, the president, our president of our United States, cares about whether there's peas in the guacamole. Yeah. Guacamole. And
wait, do people put peas in guacamole?
Melissa Clark does, apparently. I don't know. Jordana hooked me up with this. I know you know, but Stas doesn't care because she hates to talk about food when she's not at work, and we don't do that for work. So, you know.
Well, the peas in guacamole. Well, I miss the hullabaloo myself, but I'm aware of it because, you know, I'm aware of it. But there was a pea guacamole at ABC Cocina like a year and a half ago. I mean, like, this is not like a new debate, and it sort of sparked up then. And then Melissa Clark published, I think, a recipe in the New York Times, and it was like this whole Twitter hullabaloo, and people were debating whether they were team pea or team no pea.
Well, I understand. It's a variant, right? If you like the taste, do it, yeah?
Yeah, like, is it good? It's kind of like the baseline for everything.
Yeah, did it taste good or not?
Well,
Alex Stupak's pistachio guacamole. I think it's delicious.
Sure, and he makes a great one with uni as well, which is quite good.
Yeah,
it's quite good.
Thug life. I'll eat that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be my first. That wouldn't be my first way to describe it, but I like where you went with it. You know, whatever, right, exactly. But, like, we need things to debate because, like, we're, you know...
What's the debate?
It's not like hungry for, you know, arguments that, you know, there's... Everyone wins. It's an approach debate. We can all feel good at the end of the day.
I don't. Okay, then.
Right.
I mean, how's that an argument?
Well, because it's like it's a light way to have a debate and sort of like exorcise some of our demons without, you know, offending anyone.
Well, I'll tell you what,
I'm talking about human nature.
My guacamole thing, I put cumin in mine all the time.
Well, I mean, yeah. You bring shame upon this family.
Yeah, well, you know what? I paid for the avocados. I do what I want. And the debate there ends. If you don't want to eat my guac,
I want to eat your guac, actually.
You know, that's what I'm saying. You know what? Nastasia doesn't like cumin, and so she doesn't put it. We've had this discussion on the air before.
Yeah.
So listen to this. You ready for this? Nastasia does not put cumin in her chili.
Wow. Well, too much cumin goes B.O.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
that's a thing.
But too little cumin, and that's you got tomato thing. Stew. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like beef tomato stew.
For me, a guacamole is measured. I mean, you can put whatever you want in it, frankly. Like, I wouldn't put cumin, but it's a tasty flavor. I can understand why you would. It's about the gradient of color. If you overmash your guacamole and it's like all like the same color green, then you and I have some words.
All right, here's the issue. Like, I like a chunky, like old style. I also like hyper pureed, both.
Yeah, I'm on the chunky style. I can't do the pureed.
Okay, I also like both kinds of peanut butter. I'm just going to go there.
Yeah, but that's a totally different thing.
Really?
Guacamole, you want to see the green. You want to see the dark green and the light green and the sort of yellowy, and it reminds you what you're eating, and it connects you to the earth, and it's like a whole thing.
It connects you to the earth. They grow in trees.
The puree, yeah. What does a tree grow out of, Arnold?
Well, so do I grow out of the earth. You look at me and remind you of the earth.
Well, when I mash you into a guacamole, I'll be sure to keep the gradient of color.
Strong. Hey. Speaking of mashed and peas, though, I was just in London, and those guys make the mashed minted peas, which I didn't know I liked.
Yeah.
I didn't know I liked mashed minted peas.
Super tasty.
They're delicious.
Yeah.
I had one excellent version of it that spoiled me forever, and one like, oh, my God, why didn't I have the excellent one all the time? Because the second one I had, I was like, oh, mashed minted peas, mashed minted peas. And they were like, you know, like all kind of like, you know what I mean? Kind
they
of
were like, give him the bad stuff. He's too excited.
Yeah. It's ruined forever. Oh, man. Doesn't it suck to like just get turned on to something and have gotten a really good one and then someone gives you the crap the next day?
Mm.
The worst. All right. And one more thing. E.W. Nasser wrote in, a friend of the show, regarding the caller about eggless ice cream a while ago. He's been using Jenny's ice cream recipes for a while. J-E-N-I. Look it up on the internet with great results. Should we do a question, Jack? Do we have time?
I have one more caller if we want to squeeze that in.
Let's do it. Caller, you're on the air.
You have one question, caller.
Oh, hi, Jack is the hammer today.
Hi. I wanted to ask you, I had a great time at Booker and Dax last weekend, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
I wanted to ask you about the how to recreate the razzmatazarak, and also just kind of like your general formula for Radlers, or like any kind of interesting ideas you would try with them.
The razzmatazarak is they were doing they were getting freeze dried raspberries and then blending them justinoed into the liquor and spinning them out. So any sort of like freeze dried raspberry, and I think they're still using freeze dried raspberries. So that's what they use for their base, and then otherwise it's a straight sazerac. It's the only use of Peychaud's I allow in the bar because I detest Peychaud's bitters. It tastes like cough syrup. Jordana, you love cough syrup. That's why. That's what that look on your
scissor.
Face. Scissor. Yeah. I know what? We actually used to have Robitussin on the back bar. Remember that?
If it's not a controlled substance, no interest.
Whoa. You're getting the real.
That's what Scissorp is. It's not just like Robitussin.
But we're doing it for flavor, Jordana, just for flavor. And it tastes remarkably like Peychaud's. Because Peychaud's tastes.
I know where I see that.
Yeah,
can see that.
And then we flamed it with the red hot. Anyway, back to the question. So like that's how they do that. And other than that, I think it's fairly straight up. Like you know, sazerac. I think they do the absinthe. They might rinse with something else. I got to get the spec. It's not actually my spec. I didn't write the spec, so I gotta get it. But the Rattler, honestly, it's the only recipe that I've written that's written in cans. So like you do it just like you do the old school orange juice. We take a can of clarified. Of the beer, and then we take, and you want like a relatively non-hoppy, relatively light beer, and then we pour a can of the clarified grapefruit juice into it and carbonate it. And that's it. It's like super simple. A couple drops of salt. Super simple, super refreshing, very light alcohol. But I like Radlers a lot. Even Stas likes them. She's not a beery person. You had the Radler at BDX, any of you guys? It's like,
no.
Obviously, like a lot of people, they do like the lemon in the beer, but I like grapefruit. I like grapefruit in beer. I think it's delicious, but you can't go too hoppy. You know what I mean? And also, I don't think the one we use is not Cascade, even though that would be a more grapefruity thing. But anyway, we don't. But anyway, so like, I would think, like, anything like that, I think in the summer, people like the low alcohol stuff. People like a pounder. And the juice itself is too damn sweet, but when you cut it with the beer, then like the sweetness is right on the thing and like the beeriness is right. So it's like right in between. It's like the Arnold Palmer of beers.
Kind of. Shandy,
yeah. But like the grapefruit in particular, I find refreshing.
Be good with some mushy peas.
Some mushy minted peas, but a bright green mushy minted pea. Anyway, hope that helps. We're going to commercial break. Coming right back with Cooking Issues.
Hello out there. It's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Longer than normal break, back with Cooking Issues. Hey, Jack, did you play any Jackie Molecules while we were on break?
No, you didn't.
Oh, I did not play Jackie Molecules.
Can you play the Jackie Molecules ringtone, please?
Oh, man, I absolutely will. Here, hold on, let me pull it up. Did you download it yet?
I don't know how to.
You don't know how to?
I made a ringtone for our friend Peter Kim, who is the...
Brother Peter.
Yeah, Peter Kim is, by the way, the director of the August... Museum of Food and Drink, and we actually have an exhibit that's going to open in October. We can't say who's paying for it yet, but we got a chunk of change to do it. And so, but I made him a ringtone that Nastassi and I enjoy, and I'll play it for you now while Jack is getting up his jacket.
I actually have mine. Here we go.
I got mine.
Oh, you have yours already?
No child wants to play with a Peter in the box.
Can you hear that? Oh, yeah, he was doing it
again. No child wants to play with a Peter in the box.
Yeah, yeah. Because Nastassi and I are obsessed with Rudolph.
Wow.
Yes.
My name's all wrong.
No child wants to play with a
Peter.
I'm a bot, so I had to come here.
Oh, I love that show, King Moonracer. That show makes less and less sense every time I watch it. And Stassi, you've seen it, what, 857 times?
You've probably seen it more because you have kids.
Yeah, but I think it freaks Booker out. He doesn't. You know what he doesn't like to watch? He doesn't like to watch the other one, the one with Heat Miser and Snow Miser. Mm-hmm. And even though Thomas Waugh, the bartender, is an exact mix of Heat Miser and Snow Miser.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Whoa. He totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Okay, so
wait, you were reading for
Jackie me. Molecules. Where are my Jackie Molecules at?
That was the one without you.
Oh. Not even better.
Jackie Molecules.
Oh, man. Oh, can any Cooking Issues listener download that?
You had to donate to the Kickstarter campaign, but I'll tell you this. If you email Heritage Radio and ask specifically and ask nicely, I'll send it over.
I'm going to put that on. You never call me, Jack. You never call me anymore. So I'm going to have that be your ringtone when you
perfect.
I want like all my buddies to have custom ringtones.
Why not? We live in a world where that's possible.
You know Nastasia's, right?
No.
I shouldn't do this. This is not about cooking. And really, like, I have so many questions to get to, but, you know, I can't help it. Those of you that have met Nastasia in the real life will appreciate this.
Yeah. You are mean to me. You are mean to me.
Yeah. Okay, we got a question in. Matt from Aquan.
I have to do this. There's a caller who's been waiting the whole time.
All right, caller, you are on the air.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
Hey, this is Chris from the Green Zone with the mint question.
Oh, what happened? You did, like, you already had your event, yeah?
Well, it's ongoing series of events, so it's never too late.
All right. All right. All right. So what happened with the one that you did? So the question,
well,
by the way, you're trying to do mint. Trying to,
you know,
do mint, right?
I blended it up. I tried to batch it several times in advance. I blend it in my BlendTec. I have a BlendTec, not a VitaPrep. But, and I tried adding ascorbic acid as an antioxidant. That didn't help. I'm basically using your blender muddling technique from Liquid Intelligence. And ascorbic acid didn't work. I thought it might keep it from browning, but then I remembered all your talk about acids turning things with chlorophyll brown.
Well, yeah, except...
But it tasted okay.
Yeah, moderate amounts of ascorbic acid didn't help.
Baking soda, because I know that alkaline things will keep things green, but then it stayed green, but it tasted funny.
Yeah.
And so for my events so far, I've just been blending it on the spot and serving the drink on the spot at the bar. But I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to keep that green color for more than like half an hour.
No, mint is much harder than the rest of the herbs. The ascorbic acid didn't help at all?
No, I mean, in fact, if anything, that made it worse.
Right. Well, if you add small amounts, so too much acidity can go the other way, but like it should. The baking soda did work though, and you tried even like toning it down to. It's hard. Mint is really hard. Mint wants to go brown really badly.
Yes, terrible.
Have you tried using like semi-dried?
Well, I haven't, but so the whole point is that in you know, my bar is a Middle Eastern themed cocktail bar, and in the Middle East, blended mint lemonade is super popular, and it always has this vivid green color and really fresh taste. So that's what I'm going for.
Right, but they're using dried, right?
No, they're using fresh, but they blend it to order on the spot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had luck keeping fresh mint. First of all, you can't blanch it. It's destroyed. You can't blanch it. You can't heat it.
Yeah, no, blanching didn't work. I tried that, too.
No, as soon as you heat the mint, it's ruined. It's rent.
Yeah.
But then, I think the baking soda is going to make it taste soapy.
It didn't taste soapy. It tasted almost like creamy, if that makes sense.
Mm. Creamy. That sounds like that could be good.
Yeah, it didn't have like a creamy texture or anything, but like it had this slightly sweet, almost vaguely fatty dairy taste.
Cliff says blend peas into it, but he's just joking. That goes back to the guacamole debate we were having earlier. Although, you know what? Fake green, not fake, but like chlorophyll extracts, one thing you could do. You could do that. You could do chlorophyll extracts in it. That's cheating. Mm. That's cheating like
a mofo. Do chlorophyll extracts not turn brown over time?
No, I think like you make like a good spinach extract, that'll stay green.
It keeps for a while. Huh.
Green. Yeah.
Yeah.
Green.
I heard that's actually the source of the color in chartreuse.
You heard right.
Yeah.
Spinach. spinach.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, well, see how that works. I mean,
spinach and reduce it down, or what?
I mean, you don't need that much, I don't think. Like, if you make a good do you have a good recipe off the top of your head, Cliff, for that? Do you make that for the TV shows ever, for the green?
It's as a blanch blend strain.
But you squeeze the hell out of it before you blend it, right?
Yeah, squeeze
the hell, get that black, dark stuff out, then blend, strain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the spinach.
Yeah. The, you know, the other problem, though, is when mint turns brown, it also, the flavor changes. So if it's mainly the color, but you're not getting oxidative flavor changes in it, then you're going to be okay. But if it starts tasting swampy, that's when you know you're going to be...
Yeah, it doesn't actually taste so bad. It definitely... I know what you mean. Like, you know, if I muddle a mojito and I let it sit out for a while, it starts to smell and taste awful.
Did you know that you're not allowed to yell at customers for not drinking their stuff fast enough? Did you know that?
Well, I mean, you know, when I blend it to order, the customers are definitely drinking it fast enough.
Mm, good. Good for them. Anyway, but like, look, keep calling and tweeting back and let me know whether you come up with something that works, because it's a problem that everyone has had. We do all of our stuff on mint to order, just because I've never been able to get it to keep, and I never do mint for outside events when we're going to do bottle batching, because I can't get it to work. So if you come up with something that you like, just let us know, alrighty?
Okay, sounds good.
Alrighty. Matt wrote in for...
Wait, Jordana's on the air for a reason. We only have 5 minutes left. She had a big question.
Let me just finish Matt, because I started it, and then we'll do it. Matt from Akron wrote in on quinine. I haven't been able to get quinine sulfate USP from Spectrum Chemical. Tips on that would be appreciated. They rejected my LLC's attempt. Tell them you're a school, right? Tell them you're a school. I didn't tell you to just falsely represent that you're a school. I'll take that back. I don't know. Figure something out. To make tonic, but I have been able to get cinchona bark. The tonic I made from the cinchona bark is it cinchona or cinchona? I've always said kin.
I think it's cinchona.
Okay. Cinchona is great tasting, but is brownish color that many find unappealing. Can you think of any way to clarify it? Well, remember, clarity and color are two different things. I can have something that's totally clear, it's still going to be brown, right? So you want colorless and clear. When I do it, I can make it totally clear. I mean, clear in a centrifuge or with good filtration, and that's going to be good enough for carbonation. Anyway, here's a link to Jeffrey Morgenthaler's page if you need the recipe. Yeah, I have the recipe. He also adds other spices to it. I've done a decent quinine. In fact, I have a recipe for it in Liquid Intelligence, how to use the bark. The problem is that even when it's fully clear, there are foaming agents in the cinchona bark that aren't the quinine, and you're going to get more foam out. So you just need to be careful. If you do a good job clarifying, and you could put it through a filter to try and do that. Like, you could put it through some sort of filter that gets all the particles out, but I hate doing that. You could spin it in a low-grade centrifuge. That would also work, because you don't need to do that much. But you need to get it crystal clear. Once it's crystal clear, I mean, the color's not that unappealing. Once it's really watered down to the point where you're going to use it, then it looks almost like a ginger ale, and people will find that it's pleasant. And if you do get it clear, you will get foaming when you open the bottle, but you won't continuously lose carbonation because of constant nucleation of bubbles. So hope that helps. Now... Jordana, we're gonna have to do another freaking catch up.
I'm ready when you are.
I got 2 whole weeks worth of questions here I'm not gonna get to answer. Jordana, what do we got going?
Okay, so here's my situation. I'm going to Burning Man again this summer. And
wait, you went once and you're gonna go again?
Yeah, I'm gonna go for like as long as they'll have me, basically.
I thought the whole thing was that they have anyone that shows up.
Definitely not the whole thing.
Really?
It's like a very regimented thing with like tickets and a whole.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Isn't it just like a bunch of people like lighting gas fires, and it didn't start as a bunch of people like bringing a bunch of crazy stuff and lighting big gas fires in the desert?
It actually started on a beach in San Francisco. And it's grown to, I mean, it's the second largest city in Nevada outside of Las Vegas for 1 week out of the year. It's 70,000 people. And it's like an entire infrastructure. It's the city. I mean,
are there gas fires? Because like, if there's no gas.
Okay. There are definitely fires. You burn the effigy, don't worry. And a lot of the art burns as well. And it's a really amazing community. I mean, it's like a staggering infrastructure, actually. It's really, stunning how well it actually works, considering its reputation.
And where do you live in this situation? Do you have like some sort of like
I live in a camp. Yeah.
Like a Bedouin tent? They're pretty awesome.
I live in like a trailer. Trailer. Double wide. Really classy.
Wait, double wide?
Double wide.
They bring double wides into this?
Well, we bring it. Yeah, we bring it from Reno. Drive it in.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's upping the game.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people live in tents, and that's still the majority, for sure.
I would have to do the trailer.
Yeah, it's, I mean, listen, like,
double
basically
wide
what
some
it provides, I mean, it's not a whole, it's not, like, luxurious by any means, and I share it with six people, so it's not, it's cramped.
When you say double wide, like, you're talking about the ones that my grandma used to live in Wappingers Falls?
You press a button, you drive it in, so you hitch it to a truck, and you drive it in, and then you park it, and then you press a button, and it expands.
Oh, so it's a movie trailer. It's like Haddad's.
I don't know what Haddad's is,
the movie trailer.
No, guys. It's not. Oh, right. Yeah. Actually, I do know what Haddad's is. Amazing. No, it looks like an RV. It just doesn't have the driving mechanism inside of it. It's hitched to a truck. Basically, what it provides is like a little bit more protection from the elements, and it has a bathroom a refrigerator. So that actually helps with some storage issues, but not to the extent that I'm going to need them this summer because part of the whole experience there is that you go and you want to contribute to the community. Last year, I really kind of let it all wash over me and it was really amazing and I took so much from the experience, but I felt like I didn't contribute that much. So this year, my group and I decided that we want to build a bar at Burning Man to give back to the community.
By give, you mean you're not going to sell liquor, you're going to give it away?
There's no selling.
There's no
selling.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
It's a gift. And so actually last year it sort of happened organically. We were making palomas for everyone, which was really nice. But this year we want to make it a little bit more formal. We actually want to build a structure and we have this idea for like a rope installation art piece. And I want to do, and our camp is Day of the Dead themed. Shout out La Calaca. So we want to do, Mexican cocktails. But part of that is citrus and the environment, the climate of Burning Man. The citrus will go immediately, so you can't actually bring citrus. So I started to think about what are some alternatives to how can I fake citrus basically in the desert. So my first thought was that I would do, minding that there are sort of packing issues as well. Like I'm bringing two duffels. We don't have a tremendous amount of room. There's not, you got to be a little bit scrappy. So my first thought was maybe inspired by the acid tasting that you did at the fantastic MOFAD benefit at Carnegie Hall. I thought maybe I would do, I would fake lime juice with some of the powdered acids. And so I want more information about that. But then I was told by my friend Nastasia that you actually had another idea.
Yes, many, many.
So let's talk about it.
Whenever you have a problem, here's the parameters. How many drinks are we talking about? How many drinks?
Well, yeah, well, that's a...
give me a...
I'm going to say...
50, 100, 1,000. Where
I'm going to say 400.
400.
400 to 500, let's say.
So let's say you were going to just bring straight up lime juice. Let's say I can make it keep for you, right?
Okay.
You're going to be talking about, in the levels that I'm doing, let's say about an ounce per drink. How many drinks? 400?
Let's say 400 or 500.
So like 500 ounces, we'll call that like 8 2-liter bottles. Can you do it?
Could I bring 8 2-liter bottles? No. It's too heavy. I can't travel with that.
Now you're getting tough. Here's the problem with acids.
Yeah, talk to me.
Acids don't have, first of all, they don't have the richest of flavor that a real, citrus is going to have. They're good for making sodas and things that are going to keep infinitely. And the good news is the amount of acid that's contained in a liter, right? So a kilogram of lime juice only weighs 60 grams, right? But things that are shaken that have acids in them have no texture because they don't have any of the proteins that you get out of the citrus. And it's never going to have that kind of fresh kind of fruit kind of a thing going on. If you could have someone deliver the citrus to the trailer, then you could juice it and cook it. The answer to keeping it is doing cordial, right?
Right.
So, if you want to use real citrus, the answer is you don't want to be juicing every day, and the juice is going to go bad,
even though we do have refrigeration in the trailer, and there's actually a little bit of added refrigeration in this sort of, desert kitchen thing, it's not something I can count on.
Right.
It's not...
Equal quantities of sugar and lime juice, because you're going to remember, you're going to need sugar out there, too. So equal quantities of sugar and lime juice, if you just bring it up to a boil with some peel in it and let it settle out, that can stay out in the desert covered, not in a fridge, forever.
And we're talking about, by the way, like temperatures can rise during the day to over 100 degrees and higher, and at night they can drop to freezing.
Yeah, all good.
Very, very challenging environment.
Yeah, but this, it's all good. You'll be good for how long is it? Less than a week. Yeah. So you'll be good because the combination of the acidity and the sugar ain't nothing growing in that cordial, right? So it's totally preserved. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can't fly it out there, right. But you know, you could like when you pick up the thing, like quickly juice like the limes or have someone buy the. Hey, actually, don't buy the really bad stuff. But once you're going to cook it, the lime juice doesn't have to be super fresh anyway because you're going to make a cordial with it, right? Test it here first so you get the recipe right. But you could literally just buy the, I'm making air quotes, like fresh lime juice that's been juiced a couple of days ago. You could buy it by the quart out there in Reno. You know, my crazy uncle Ralph Vigorito was a pit boss in Reno back in the day.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Glad to pay him a visit if you'd like.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's in Jersey now. Oh. I haven't seen him in a while. Anyway, oh, my God. He's an awesome character. Anyways, so, yeah, like equal quantities of that lime juice. Not the real BS, you know, but like semi-fresh.
Right.
Here's another good one. Even easier. Take the malic acid and the citric acid that I'm talking about.
The powders.
Yeah. Test this. I haven't done it. I haven't made an orange cordial. But take the malic and the citric, and it's 32 grams of citric and 20 grams of malic acid per liter of OJ. Because OJ is fantastically easy to buy, fresh squeezed, right? Combine that and every liter of that OJ, which you can source anywhere, mm-hmm. and you can just fly out with the powders, put equal quantity, a kilo of sugar in, bring it up to the boil, let it come down, and use that as your sour mix. Should be good. I haven't done it, so we have to test it. It's going to have a cooked orange flavor, mm-hmm. not a fresh orange flavor, mm-hmm. but it'll have still like a bright acidity to it.
Okay.
I'll test it. I'll see how it works. I'd throw a couple peels in anyway, but that should be easy and you can source everything. But I don't know. I'm just talking off the top of my head now.
It's also a matter. I mean, there are other logistical issues. I mean, there's this desert kitchen. So there is a stove. I mean, it's a propane, you know, like one burner, but so there's capability to boil.
But you only need to do it one time.
Yeah, but it's also like, I don't want to, there's a lot of people that need to be fed in this kitchen. So I can't like commandeer that for
I'll tell you what I'll do just for you. When do you have to go?
Leaving the last day of August.
All right. So we have. Yeah. You know what I'll do? I will take and I will make a non-boiled version of this cordial in quotes because it's not boiled.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw it in my dehy at 110 degrees for a week and we'll see how it tastes.
And then we're going to make a powder.
Well, no. I'll take the – in other words, like you'll just go out there. You'll buy OJ and sugar out there in Reno. Dump the powder, the OJ, and the sugar together. Stir it until it dissolves and see how it tastes. I'll just do a test in my dehydrator and see what happens to it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right.
So this is the key. Light enough to travel with.
In the luggage, yeah.
In the luggage.
Luggages.
Shelf stable.
Ish, yeah.
Enough.
Yeah.
You know. And approximates the flavor of real citrus.
I mean, it will be real citrus. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We're not just going to approximate. We're going to make it happen.
Okay.
We're going to make it happen. All righty. And listen, we're going to have to do a catch-up show because I did not get to hardly any – I got exactly to one question. We have lots of questions that I know I owe you guys the answers to. Please don't get angry. We still have your questions. We'll get back to them next time on Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.